Laugh track's on now.
Ha!
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, the Generation Exploitation Podcast, and Laugh Tracks, a show about comedy. We continue with an interview I conducted several months ago with a legend in the world of comedy records, primarily in what is known as the adults-only genre. Woody Woodbury's smile is familiar to anybody who frequents thrift stores. His gazillion-selling series of albums are available at every secondhand shop in North America, but few of those around today know his story.
These kids today, I wonder about them. This 12-year-old boy went to his father. He said, Daddy, he says, when you proposed to mother, was it a moonlight night? Was there a soft summer breeze? Did she make you get down on your hands and knees? What happened, Dad? Father says, what the devil are you talking about, Bobby? He said, I don't remember how I proposed to your mother. It's too many years ago. He says, I'll tell you what you do, though, son. He says, go on out there in the front porch and ask your grandfather. He's very emotional. He remembers all that stuff. The little fellow went out in the front porch. He said, Grandpa, do you remember how you proposed to Grandma? The old fellow said, Bobby, I'll never forget. It was on this very same front porch swing many years ago. Your grandmother and I were seated out here one Sunday afternoon, rocking back and forth. And all of a sudden, she said, John, lean over here. I want to whisper in your ear. So I leaned over, and she whispered in my ear. And I said, the devil you are. And we were married the very next day. So those of you who are a little too moralistic and don't realize it, nothing has changed over the years. And it all stems from our days when we were youngsters. And a lot of us have youngsters now. We wonder about them, what's going to happen. And we're the product of our own environment.
This fourth grade teacher was in front of her class. She said, Mary, stand up. Little Mary stood up. She said, Mary, tell this class, what is a pessimist? And little Mary, 8 years old, thought. She finally said, a pessimist is something that married people use so they won't have any children. He says, good heavens, that's terrible, Mary. And furthermore, it's wrong. Now get up and stand up there in the corner. Where in the world did you hear? She said, Johnny, stand up. And little John, prior to the class, stood up. She said, now, John, tell this class, what is an optimist? And little Johnny thought and thought. He finally said, an optimist is a guy who don't use pessimists.
Listening to a cut there of Woody Woodbury off his very first LP, Looks at Life and Love. Woody Woodbury, I understand that you started out in radio, local radio. Is that correct?
Well, there was a kid in St. Louis at the big radio station there.
Right.
And he had a Saturday morning comedy show, and he had every comic going. And luckily for me, one of the technicians there was a friend of mine in St. Louis, and this kid taped every one of these shows that I did. All I did was the intro on the Saturday morning. I did the intro to, say, Dave Barry, and I had records that they didn't even have. And then I did Bill Cosby, and I did the, I didn't do them, I introduced them, and they would take snippets and parts from these albums. It's interspersed a little music and many radio commercials, you know what radio is.
Right. Now, who would you consider some of your contemporaries in the adults-only genre? Of course, we already spoke about Rusty Warren, but...
A guy in St. Louis called Davy Knows Bull. Did you ever hear him? He made records there in St. Louis, sold throughout the Midwest.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Davey Bold welcoming you all to the famous Celebrity Club. I used to model for the front of the Pontiac, you know what I'm saying? Pick a size schnauzer. Here's some more people coming in. Make believe you're having a wonderful time. That's a good laugh, sir. I hate to do your laundry, but you laugh beautiful, I'll tell you that. There they are. That's a gorgeous dress here you almost have on there. That's beautiful. One with polka dots there looks like a punch board. I think he wants to take a chance. Nice coat. The women always dress beautifully here. There's a gal with a V-neck dress. What does a V stand for, dear? Virgin? Must be an old dress, huh? What have I got? We have a young lady back there in a family way. Family lay, there's a good number. Family way, a young lady in a family way there. We'd like to dedicate our next number to her. You should have danced all night.
And that was a clip from Davey Bold, as you mentioned, Woody, from St. Louis, off his LP, The Bold Humor of Davey Bold at the Celebrity Club on Birchmount Records here in Canada, and I believe on the Barry label in the United States. Davey Bold.
He never could connect in New York. He never could connect in L.A., whereas, revert back to Fletcher, I think the reason that I connected was not due to me. I think it was really due to Fletcher. He laid the groundwork. You know, and that's how I met Ralph Edwards and Don Federson. That's how I wound up doing those shows and taking Johnny Carson's daytime show. And
so what year was that you replaced Johnny Carson on the game show? Who Do You Trust? Is that the name of the show?
That's right. Who Do You Trust? Grammatically incorrect, but that was the name.
And so I'm assuming Johnny left the game show because he had been awarded the Tonight Show.
Yeah, we were all up. I'll tell you, we were all in the race, so to speak, for the Tonight Show. And Johnny Carson got it, and rightly so, because he was deserving of it, and very good, and he became, you know, he was very good, and we were friends. But I never did the Tonight Show from the minute Carson had it. Bill Nimmo was my announcer. Bill Nimmo used to be the Friday Night Fight announcers, when Friday Night Fights were very, very big, early days of television, as far back as the Dumont Television Network. Bill Nimmo was the announcer, and we went on to... Tonight Show, we used to shill for Johnny Carson because Jack Parr left the show, and the New Yorkers, believe me, they resented Carson. They didn't even know him, but they resented him because they didn't know him. Then they got, of course, within a year or so, they got to love him. But for a long time, we used to go shill the audience. We know what a shill is. We would go in there and try to get the audience in a good mood for Johnny Carson. And he had a tough time there for a while with The Tonight Show. That maybe shouldn't be published, but although I do put it in the book, it's because it's the truth of the matter.
I'll never forget back in 1962, I got a frantic phone call, and NBC said they wanted me to replace a big television host who had retired from show business. Do you remember the very first time?
I remember it.
You probably don't.
What's this?
The very first time you said...
And now, here's Johnny!
Let the orgy begin.
I better explain this. Some guy, some clown, walked into our office the other day. He's wearing this toga, which is a new thing. He said that they're trying to get the fellas wear this summer. It's just an old toga. Is there a draft in here? I feel like a real boy wonder. People look at you and wonder, is that a real boy?
I feel like an idiot.
Thank you. Look, thank you, that's very nice. You look, you really must stop because I have to have the applause sign back in my honeymoon suite. Now, Ed, I want to talk to you.
What?
And I don't like to do this coast to coast on television, but enough is enough. Now, we've known each other for 14 years.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
And we've worked together, and
right.
I have great affection for you.
Right.
But it was not necessary to stand in the room on my wedding night going, hey-o! I think that's pushing friendship, I think, a little far. But anyway, to tell you the truth, I didn't get much sleep last night. My wife woke up with a nightmare. She did. She was dreaming that it was our first night together, and she thought Joy Bishop was standing in for me. Right. You see that introduction?
Yes, Dino.
It's really what a treat being introduced by two drunks the same night. Hey, a little excitement here last night. The earthquake. There was an earthquake in Los Angeles last night. I'm sitting in a hotel, and all of a sudden, the hotel starts to move. And then there's a little pause, right? And another tremor. I thought Ed had fallen out of bed. Then I realized it couldn't have been you. How could you fall off a floor? Ed said he slept like a log the whole night, which was true because I got up in the morning, he was in my fireplace.
So although you didn't score the gig as the new host of The Tonight Show, and as you say, you didn't appear on the show once Carson took over, had you appeared on The Tonight Show previously under Jack Parr or Steve Allen?
I had done it with Jack Parr and when Jerry Lewis would... Jerry and I had become good friends just many years ago. And he did The Tonight Show, and then I did it a couple of times with him. This is many, many years ago.
With Steve Allen?
I used to sub for Steve. I would take over the show, but that's at that time, Steve was doing Tonight Show from Los Angeles. A lot of people didn't know that. Steve had the show in Los Angeles, and Joe Wolfson was my agent. He was with the William Morris office, and he'd call me in a panic. He said, DZZ, you got to get out to L.A. He says, you got to come out. We got a problem with Steve Allen. Yeah, I don't know what the problem was. I never find out. I never did inquire, but... So I'd race out there, and they'd have all kinds of people. I had everybody I knew in show business out there. I had Joey Lewis, who was a great club comedian, and nobody would give him a job. They thought he was too blue. Well, I had him on one night and was live in those days, and the phones rang off the hook. He was so funny. We had him the next night successive, so, you know, one night after the other, and people just couldn't get over that because you never did that. You had somebody on and then you wouldn't see him for a month or two, you know. But he was that good. But I had so many actors and actresses. Raymond Burr who was the girl that Janet Blair, and I had all actresses, Ruta Lee and the great Andy, you know, the guy with the squeaky voice.
Andy Devine.
And all those guys, because I got to know them all, you know. And ahead of Ed Howard Koch on, and I had the head of I had the Pickers on from United Artists, Eugene and David Picker, and it was a wonderful, it was a great time, because Steve would be in the Orient or some darn place, I don't know where he was.
I wonder how many of us in these troubled times ever take time out from our busy work days to ask the question to Frame. Well, frames are found in the strangest places. In your cryle, on the phone, from the Firth of Forth to the Straits of Magellan, in cesspools, in filter tips, near your bird, and playing on your heartstrings. A frame likes trade school, turnip greens, Ace Brigade, chicken wire, salami, Goo Goo Dolls, Mrs. Sterling, birdseed pudding, and other frames. A Freem hates cubila, clarinet reeds, fricassee of beaks and claws, turkey wattles, protozoa, anthracite, income taxes, or pain of headache, neuritis, neuralgia. Nothing else can come home so frail, crove up the dell of a good Bertrand so often, or lose so many file saws. A Freem is dignity with a stall in its fame, bronchitis with a frog in its throat, and stupidity with a bone in its mouth. What is a Freem made of? Well, it takes the strength of a lion.
Now, in 1964,
lamb,
you appeared in a
hand,
film. I believe your first movie appearance. This was around the time of the record for selling really hot.
Hair of the dog.
a beach party film called For Those Who Think Young, which has never been released on VHS or DVD. What can you tell me about this movie, For Those Who Think Young?
Stale for frames, traffic cops grab them, little boys eat them, and Bennett Cerf lifts them. But, you know, when you get home in the afternoon after a long, tiring day's work, when you're tired and weary and worn, sick, miserable and dirty and crummy and shaking and nervous and frightened and panicky and drunk and raggedy and rotten and staggering and reeling and rolling in the gutter. Oh, when you come home and sit down in your easy chair and that little freem jumps up on the bridge of your nose and sits there and stares at you, why, I tell you, friends, it just kind of makes life worthwhile to hear those three little words, you're under arrest. And when the sun goes down and the tide goes out and the people gather round and they all begin to shout, hey, hey, Uncle Dud, it's a treat to beat your frame on the Mississippi mud. Yes, if you can keep your frame when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can ask yourself what kind of a day has it been, then you'll know that a boom is only a ding-dong, but a good cigar is a frame.
And that would be Steve Allen. And what is a frame off a Decca Records comedy sampler called Fun Time, which also features Bob and Ray, Hanny Youngman, Myron Cohen, and several other interesting comedians. And another interesting comedian we're talking with today, still Mr. Woody Woodbury. Now, Woody, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your film career. After the Comedy Records had hit big time and had been selling quite a bit for a couple of years, you got into the movies, and you were in a movie in 1964 called For Those Who Think Young, which was a teenage drive-in beach party film with what sounds like an amazing cast. What can you tell us about For Those Who Think Young?
It belongs to the Sinatra family, and I think it was Nancy's first movie. Nancy didn't have that big a part, but that was due to her dad. She was going with a singer named Tommy Sands. Frank did not care for Tommy Sands, and it's kind of a convoluted series of events that happened at that time. Sinatra was in partners with Howard Koch, who became the president, the head of Paramount Pictures. And Frank and Howard Koch were... Howard Koch was a very close friend of mine, and he and Sinatra teamed up with a company called Essex Productions, and that's where the money came from, and Pepsi-Cola.
Right, because the title, For Those Who Think Young, wasn't just in reference to the fact that this was like a teenage beach movie, but it was also Pepsi's slogan at the time, right, For Those Who Think Young, and a lot of what I've heard about the film is that it's one of the first films to feature sort of product placement in that way, that it's really nothing more than over 80 minutes of an ad for Pepsi.
Well, yeah, actually, and yet you don't see anything Pepsi in the movie. Very, very little. Very, very little. But Roz Russell, who was married to one of the second head guy at Pepsi-Cola at the time, she was in on the deal. They were in on the deal, too. That's in the hierarchy, and I was out of that. I was just they had hired me because I had a pretty good track record of replacing Carson and had a pretty good track record of with these phonograph record albums. Paul Lynde, who went on, as you know, to be the center thing, Paul and I were great friends. I happened to be straight. Paul was a little, it doesn't make any difference to me because I've been in the business so long, and I'm so old now, I've seen it all back when they were not in the closet, they were under the closet.
Right.
But Paul and I became great friends, and I was married at the time, and he and my wife and Paul just got along famously, and he was a great, great guy and a tremendous actor. He just was the mugger personified, and my partner in this motion picture.
Now, the film just has an amazing cast. I mean, you've got Ellen Burstyn when her name was still Ellen McRae, Tina Louise, who went on to play Ginger on Gilligan's Island with her future co-star, Bob Denver, playing a beatnik in For Those Who Think Young, James Darren.
Great buddy of mine, yeah. Guys were all these were all, like extras in other movies. And they had this idea to put this thing together. It was the first of the beach pictures.
Right. I think Frankie and Annette beat you to the punch, but for those who think Young would have been the first knockoff.
I made the first of the comedy records. I made the first of the... I was really lucky enough. I really come along with the first of the fun entertainment talk shows with no political rants or no,
And just before we get on to the topic of your talk show, one last note on the beach movie, for those who think Young, it also featured a surf band called The Challengers.
Yeah, I don't know whatever. I never ever knew what happened to them. I don't have any idea. We'll be right back.
we go. We just heard two tracks from an early 60s surf band called The Challengers off their LP Wipeout with The Challengers on GNP Crescendo Records. We just heard a song called RJ Mike and a song called The Cruel Sea. And the reason we play The Challengers is because they were featured in a film that our guest Woody Woodbury starred in 1964. I'm sorry, before we broke for the music there, Woody, you were mentioning that you don't know what happened to the Challengers.
I don't have any idea what happened to. I wanted to use an outfit called Strawberry Alarm Clock. Yeah, they were pretty good, but for some reason they couldn't make an agreement.
traces in common places. The price we pay to win this life of fire, 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 fire. We're on fire
tonight. You're still listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver and the Generation Exploitation Podcast, talking with my wonderful guest, adults-only comedy record legend Woody Woodbury. And we just heard a track from the Strawberry Alarm Clock, one of Woody Woodbury's favorite groups, of course, best known for Incense and Peppermints. But that epic psychedelic track we just heard was titled The World's on Fire, off of the Strawberry Alarm Clock's first and best LP, Incense and Peppermints, on Universal City Records, a label probably best known as Neil Diamond's home. So, Woody, you wanted the Strawberry Alarm Clock for your movie, although I imagine they must have been no names in 1964. I didn't even know they were around in that sort of 1 or 2 years leading up to the hippie era. But it seems odd that you couldn't get them, because they did end up in a few movies like Psych Out with Jack Nicholson and Russ Meyer's Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Valley of the Dolls, that was about the girl who was the Jacqueline Suzanne. Well, Valley of the Dolls was a story about a prostitute.
Well, there were two movies, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which was the movie I was referring to, and then the film Valley of the Dolls, based on the novel. And that one was more about young actresses trying to make it in Hollywood and kind of sleeping their way to the top and getting addicted to pills along the way.
I turn my eyes to lunatic skies of red destruction, sunrise and morning empty. Hide my head. I've got to find a direction to follow. Something that's mine, not something I follow. Heavy's the weight on me. Find it. I've got to find it. Get me behind it. Someplace for me.
In the long run,
we have two tracks off of the soundtrack to the Russ Meyer picture Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, Find It, and In the Long Run, two songs by the stars of that film, the fictional rock stars, the Carry Nations. My thanks to Woody Woodbury, talking about his comedy record and film careers. And there's still plenty more fascinating anecdotes that Woody will be sharing with me, and I will be sharing with you in future episodes of the Generation Exploitation Podcast and Laugh Tracks, a show about comedies, including Woody talking about his exploits in his groundbreaking late-night talk show, The Woody Woodbury Show, which eventually morphed into The Merv Griffin Show, and of course, lots of more great stories about the legendary nightclub comics of the past. Our thanks to Woody Woodbury. Right now, for the rest of the show, I'm going to play some various vinyl selections and outtakes. Right now, I'm going to play some selections from a comedy LP by another great nightclub comic whose attempt, however, at translating his act onto vinyl form failed miserably. Talking about a guy named Jackie Vernon, who is, by all accounts, including mine, hilarious. But when he put out an LP at the start of the 1970s called The Day My Rocking Horse Died, unfortunately, the obviously canned laughter ruined it for the most part.
Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I don't know why she broke off with me. I treated her like a prince. I gave her the best years of my life and $5. I met her at a charity ball. And even then, none of the girls would dance with me. I was thrown by the liberals for Wallace Entertainment Committee. When I met her, she had just won an Art Carney look-alike contest. Art Carney came in second. I took her out to dinner, and she ordered filet mignon, eggs benedict, crepe Suzette, two decanters of caviar, and I had heart failure. Then she lit my pipe and smoked it, down to her fingers. And that's how our courtship began. That night we did so many things. We went dancing on the Stardust roof, but I didn't like it. I kept getting tangled up in the clothesline. We went to a health bar and bought everyone in the house a round of yogurt. Then for good luck, we broke a few mirrors. Oh, did such wild things. We declared war on an army of ants. Believe me, it was no picnic. She took me into the desert, got tanked, and did her General Diane impression. We hung around gypsy weddings and collected used confetti and broken promises. I once made love to her over the phone, but then some cops dragged us out of the phone booth. I told them, you ought to put some heat in there. And then she told me about her past. She'd been a volunteer fire eater. Every time she talked in her sleep, she had to get up to put out the bed. And on Ash Wednesday, she used to put her cigarettes out on my forehead. And then she'd put me out on Thursday. She told me she was in hock up to her ears. So I redeemed her ears. I showered her with gifts. I bought her a faucet. I would have bought her a pillowcase. But I didn't know the size of her head. I was kind of naive when I heard her talk about the pill. I thought she meant aspirin. She once made me a Molotov cocktail with an olive in it. I threw it into the fireplace. You know those olives do a lot of damage? She used to make me coffee. It was so bad that I used to take cream and sugar and skip the coffee. The only thing domestic about her was that she was born in this country. She was very playful. She once ordered frog legs, then leaped over them. I ordered frog legs too, but they kept kicking the peas off my plate. Who ever heard of bow-legged frog legs? We went to the policeman's ball, but we couldn't find one policeman who'd dance with us. So we danced with criminals. She was so homely, they refused to frisk her. She had a Fruit of the Loom tattoo on one knee. And on the other knee, it read Orange Julius. You might say that she brought out the animal in me. A sloth. She called me her big moment. I said, wait a second. Her father asked me what I meant by kissing his daughter in the dark. Then he turned on the lights. And I wondered myself. So I kissed her father. I asked her to marry me, but she said that she didn't want to get involved with a single man. Finally, I talked her into it. I wanted a big church wedding, and she wanted out. So I invited her out. Ours was a shipboard romance. I knew our marriage was headed for the rocks. The captain was drunk. On our honeymoon, she insisted on separate islands and separate oceans. But in spite of it all, she wasn't very faithful. I think that she ten-timed me. She said, I'm leaving you because I'm lonely. And once again, I was forlorn and desolate, like a lighthouse in the dark. When she left me, I was very bitter. For 3 weeks, I cried on the point of my knife. I couldn't stand living with myself. I even threatened to move out. I felt so bad, I was going to stick my head in the oven. But the landlady stopped me. She didn't allow cooking in the rooms. I would have committed suicide if I could have done it without killing myself. I grew so desperate for companionship that I sent my picture to a Lonely Hearts Club, and they sent it back marked address unknown, with a beard and a mustache. But I chalked it all up to experience. That's all you have left after you've forgotten her name. How true. Yesterday's.
This is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis.
We'd like to tell you all about our latest and funniest picture for Paramount.
Of course, you mean the caddy.
Oh, of course. You know, Jerry, I don't remember the last time I had so much fun making a picture.
Boy, I'll say. How about that scene when I wrecked the department store that I'm working in?
Yeah, and what about the scene when I come home and find a strange, and I do mean strange, man in my bed, and it turns out to be you?
Tell him about the terrific game of golf I play. Go on, tell him.
Terrific. I've never seen golf played that way before.
Crazy, man, crazy.
I hate to brag, folks, but I think the caddy is the funniest picture we've made. No kidding, it's got 90 riotous minutes of howls, gags, fun, and more heartwarming entertainment than you and the family ever saw.
You'll love Jerry and me and the caddy.
Take my word for it, the caddy is the most hilarious picture we've ever made. Come on, join the fun. See Paramount's the caddy.
Yeah, the caddy. Is that all right, you cocksucker?
How was that, you shithill?
Without reading it?
I'm with you.
Okay. Next, you still rolling?
Still rolling?
All right, start.
You can cut that bit out.
Okay.
Now, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis, asking you to see our newest and funniest picture to date.
Of course, you mean the caddy.
You bet I do. The caddy is filled with 90 hilarious minutes of howls, gags, fun, and heartwarming entertainment that the entire family will enjoy.
Crazy, man, crazy.
No doubt about it, Dean. This is the funniest picture we've ever made. No kidding, folks. We're sensational. Take my word for it. Come on and join the fun. See Paramount's the caddy. It'll make you shit.
Cut out, make. You ready? He ain't doing a fucking thing. He's just standing there. Now, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis with him. We're with Dave and Sally, you cocksuckers.
Well, this guy with TB gets through here. Ready? Now, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis with a reminder to see our newest and funniest motion picture ever, The Caddy.
Oh, he's right, folks. Come on and join the fun in the most righteous 90 minutes of howl.
Righteous? Where the fuck do you see righteous? That's riotous, you greaseball.
Righteous.
What is this, a religious picture?
I ain't up. This is religious, Martin and Jerry Lewis. Woman, there's that 5 fucking lines, we can't get through it.
Come on, 15.
This is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis with a reminder to see our newest and funniest motion picture ever, The Caddy.
Oh, he's right, folks. Come on and join the fun in the most wonderful 90 minutes of howls and gags you ever saw.
We'll be seeing you in Paramount's The Caddy.
Yep, The Caddy.
With a big cock on it.
And that just about wraps it up today for this edition of Laugh Tracks, a show about comedy and the Generation Exploitation podcast. Thank you for joining us. My name is Cliff Nesteroff. We just heard the foul mouths of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis in the studio promoting their new movie, The Caddy, which was a Martin Lewis comedy in the mid-50s. And I guess they're doing radio spots and goofing around here with some foul language. And before that, we heard a version of Yesterday spritzed with jokes by Jackie Vernon and filled with canned laughter. I'm going to leave you now with a version of Eleanor Rigby that's really, really hip and groovy by a group called The Baroque Inevitable, which was the brainchild of a guy named John Simon, who went on to produce all kinds of bands in the sort of hippie, psychedelic sort of genre of the late 1960s for Columbia Records. I hope you enjoyed the show. Talk to you soon.
Party people, you are listening to Raw Radio. I'm your host, JT James, on here a little bit early here. Tonight on the show, we're going to be doing lots of fun stuff. I got my homeboys, DJ Rain, Sash in the house.